Well, Walter Morton was a key member of the department from 1927 to 1970, roughly. 75.
And a controversial person.
And a very controversial person. He was, in effect, isolated by the department.
By the faculty in general.
Right.
He annoyed them.
Yes.
But I found him very nice. He was a very good friend to me.
Mm-hmm. I see.
And I didn't find those qualities because they weren't, I suppose, directed to me.
Mm-hmm.
But he was controversial, this is true. He was very able.
Yes, right. That's agreed all around. He was very able, and he did some very fine writing and teaching.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't his course money and banking?
Yes, right. That was his field.
Mm-hmm.
But he did go off into other fields, too, occasionally. And he says in his oral history, which was just open in 1990, he restricted it for a while. He says that he was a very outspoken person. He was taught that was important.
He was.
So if he saw something wrong or not right, he would speak out on it. And so he
wasn't always particularly.
He wasn't diplomatic.
Yes.
That's
wasn't diplomatic, but it was
right.
Honest. And I don't think anyone could ever accuse him of dishonesty, mental dishonesty.
Well, I don't know whether the word honest is right here. He was viewed by many as a conspirator. He conspired with people to make an opposition group.
Well, that may be.
And he would go to great lengths to persuade people that they should be opposed to something or other.
I remember he used to have a disability which really made him a prisoner in the summer. His house of hay fever.
Uh-huh.
So he did a great deal of his consulting work with big businesses over the telephone.
I see. Yeah. Right.
And I was of the idea, of the opinion, that that's where he made so much money.
Yes, perfect. So.
And I think he left a great deal because he left it to Jane and his son Steve.
Right. Now,
do you know Steve?
Yes, I do.
You do?
I've never asked him questions about his father. I didn't think that would be the place to start anyway about any questions.
Well, I think it's good you didn't.
Yeah. Now,
he did some amazingly kind acts to people.
Mm-hmm.
A friend of theirs was in a situation. She had recently been divorced. She had secured a job and she needed a car. And he said to Rosalie, his wife, "We have two cars. We don't need two cars. We'll give her one."
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, that isn't
yeah, that's
a
right.
usual
that's right. That's right.
thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, the problem Walter talks about this problem of being isolated and being not appreciated by his colleagues.
Well, I don't think he was. I think he was isolated.
Yeah, and he said the reason for it was that Elizabeth Brandeis led a campaign to have him isolated, to be kicked out of the department and so on.
I know that we always called her E.B.
Yes.
I know that E.B. and Walter were not fond of each other. Incidentally, I have a picture here. her.
Oh, uh-huh. Very nice.
And can you see this? Can you see who that
is? Yes, uh-huh, I can.
Bill Rice, I think it's
right
there.
Right here, Bill Rice, yeah.
And are the Norris Falls there? I think E.B. is there. And Rosamond.
Here's E.B. here.
Yes, is Rosamond there?
Well, I can't tell her. I never knew her.
Anyway.
Is this Norris Hall here, this man in the white sweater? At Norris Hall?
I think they're there.
Here's Paul Rauschenbusch back here. Yes, okay, so I can see.
I know Walter said to me one day that in his estimation, he didn't think that Elizabeth Rauschenbusch was as brilliant as people like to think. That she was Justice Brandeis's daughter, and that went a long way.
Yeah, right.
Of course.
Okay, well, they were not very close friends, I guess, at least. And he said that she never forgave him for things he wrote about the unemployment insurance system of Wisconsin, which was the product of Elizabeth Brandeis, Paul Rauschenbusch,
John R. Groves. I have a picture, but couldn't find it before you came, of the signing.
Yes, I have that. And that's
Well,
that's in this book that Paul and E.B. put together, called Our UC Story. Yes. That's a good picture. Yeah.
A very nice picture.
Well, so Walter attacked the idea and the economics of it, and in a very public way. And he said that's the reason Elizabeth Brandeis wanted to get rid of him. And that she conspired with Harold Groves to make life difficult for him.
Well, I wouldn't.
No.
I don't know that, but Harold Groves, as I remember him, was not that kind of person. I would say that Harold Groves, and I knew his wife, and she lives at Oakwood, was rather a gentle person.
Yes, right. That's my feeling.
I wouldn't have said that he would conspire to get rid of anybody in any active manner, as I recall him.
But now, Walter also says in his oral history that E.B. was part of a matriarchy that tried to run the university.
Well, I think that what I would say Rhoda Otto was stronger than, took more of a lead in that field. I think Rhoda Otto definitely tried to run the university.
And that this included matters having to do with the economics department and the School of Commerce.
Mm-hmm.
And
Professor Elwell?
Yes, Elwell was mentioned.
He was a pupil of my father.
I see.
Great many years ago.
Yeah. And that Elizabeth Brandeis used influence with Dean Ingram in particular, and that this was the way they kept making life difficult for him. Now, much of this sounds to me like a mentally ill person talking about imaginary enemies.
You mean Walter?
What Walter was saying. But on the other, and the first thing when I heard about this matriarchy, I thought, well, he just imagined all that. But don't think it was?
No, I don't think that's imaginary. Mm-hmm. There was definitely a time, for instance, when Glenn Frank was president, that the strong women, or wives of certain people in the faculty, were instrumental in trying to get, very instrumental in trying to get rid of Glenn Frank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now that would be E.B., especially Rhoda Otto, Jane Goss, Dorothy Walton, who's Jim Walton was
mm-hmm.
chemistry. Isabella Fowler. Where's that list?
Well, that sounds like the list. Oh, here, I just put it down here.
What's on the floor?
You mentioned.
Yeah. Just go down. All right.
Well, Briggs, Caldwell, Curvin, Dykstra.
Now, Mrs. Dykstra, of course,
wasn't
here
then, yeah.
She was not here at the beginning.
Right, right.
And she was here only a few years, a brief span.
Mm-hmm.
And I would never say that she was a really influential member of the Friday
Okay, Ritual. I see, I see.
Jane Goss was.
Uh-huh. Well, Sharp is mentioned here.
Well, that was Malcolm Sharp, Professor
yeah.
Sharp's son. And that was brief also.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. So I think you've mentioned the key figures then.
Yes.
Already.
And that group, yeah. you see, was very politically mm-hmm. oriented. And that is one thing that used to trouble me and annoy me.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think when one is politically oriented to that extent, one is apt to lose one's sense of balance
mm-hmm.
and fairness.
Mm-hmm.
And, politics was never my greatest interest. Literature was. But it's,
Do you recall any particular incident where you thought they were intervening inappropriately?
Oh, yes, I think they definitely tried to get rid of Glenn Frank.
You thought that was
And I thought that that was absolutely
mm-hmm.
wrong. I mean, Glenn Frank was no different when he came here. The university may have made a mistake in getting him here, but he was, I think he was editor of the Century magazine before he came here. And if they didn't want that kind of person, they shouldn't have called him.
Mm-hmm.
His wife was his liability. Definitely. She was not liked for various reasons, which I think were valid. The birds woke her up in the morning, so she called the university police to come and shoot them. That doesn't endear you to people who are fond of birds. I think the group, the Friday lunch group, they are meeting today, but I wasn't going to go today anyway. The only people now, there are five of us left. Dottie McKendrick.
Mm-hmm. Mentioned Foster here.
Jimmy Foster. You know who they are.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Hazel. She's Price.
Mm-hmm.
Kathleen Haygood.
Yes.
And myself.
That's it. Mm-hmm. So you function more as a literary club?
No, oh, no, we're not a literary club at all.
Just a
word would be far more to my liking.
I see. Yeah.
You see, we now, and have for some years, the hostess serves coffee and a dessert,
mm-hmm.
and then they play bridge. Well, it's very difficult for me on account of my eyes.
I see.
The bridge. Very difficult for me
mm-hmm.
to do it. I can do it, I can meet with them more easily when they meet here, because I know where things are. But I think that Julia McKay also, but Jimmy McKay is not with it very much.
I see.
Now anymore. She has some days when she, and Helen Curving dropped out. Mm-hmm. So she's not. She and Dottie McKendrick didn't see eye to eye in the bridge game.
I see, yeah. Right.
There's nothing like cards to make your fur fly.
Yeah, it stirs, it strains a friendship sometimes.
Yes,
so,
it does.
Rich. Well, get back to the Walter Morton story about all this. He, in 1944 and 45, he engaged in public criticism of Harold Groves.
He did?
For having a book that came out in that year about the tax system of the United States.
Yes, Harold Groves' field of taxation.
And Walter wrote editorials in the Cap Times and put out quite a few critical comments.
Well, I think he was troublesome.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was a troublemaker.
Okay.
Even though he was always very nice to me, very nice, and I have nothing personally in my relationship with him, nothing but pleasant things. His wife, Rosalie, was Tom Amley's sister, and Tom Amley's wife, Gerta, is Hazel Rice, was Hazel Rice's sister.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now Hazel can't stand the mention of Walter Morton. But there are a lot of things she can't stand them to be mentioned. Mm-hmm. In fact, a certain sense of balance, I think, is necessary.
Mm-hmm.
For history to be valid at all.
Yeah, it seems right.
Otherwise, it's a bunch of prejudices.
Yeah, it can come out that way.
And there's a difference between prejudice and fairness.
Right. Well, Walter said things about Harold Groves that Harold regarded as libelous in a way.
Said
that he was. That he had, his motives were to please the leaders of big business and to,
you mean to the promote Harold's
yeah for promote the cause of monopoly and so on in the country. And this, of course, was very upsetting to Harold.
Of course.
And he believed that, but he also said in his memoir that was a mistake for him to have done that, to have published that book.
He said
in 1944. It was the biggest mistake he ever made in his life. And so he almost sounds like
almost
he was kind of a willing victim of Walter's challenge.
Own personality.
Yeah. So that is a very puzzling
How well do you know Steve?
Well, I've known him for a few years, but I don't know him very well.
He's an odd person.
Yeah, he seems to be very quiet and retired.
He has.
He
took one of the most gorgeous photographs I've ever seen of their place in the country.
Oh, I see.
At a time when that type of photography was almost unknown.
Mm.
And that, it was simply beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Almost three-dimensional. He probably still, of course, he still has it.
Mm-hmm.
And Walter, you know, bought him that house.
I see.
And gave him the house.
I see.
But he's a solitary person.
Yeah.
I don't see him at all. We used to see him occasionally at Bishop's Cafeteria. Occasionally they came in. Not when Walter was around, but occasionally. And Walter used to take me when he was alone, when for some reason Rosalie couldn't come or something, or was away, to out to dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And he was always gracious. He showed none of this type of behavior that sort of.
I know he could be that way.
Do you feel that in reading this oral history,
mm-hmm.
that there was a certain sense of emotional imbalance in him?
It sounds that way to me, yeah. But then I realize that later I pick up things that make it sound not so
mm-hmm.
raw, like about this matriarchy, for example.
That group really ran the university to a vast extent.
And then I'm surprised when I reread things and find that that Harold Groves, in a sense, agreed with his critic. He agreed with what
Walter
Martin
said. Now, those
are
a list
uh-huh.
of people that I was thinking
mm-hmm.
came to my mind.
Oh, yes.
Does he mention Harry Jerome?
No.
Does he mention Richard T. Ely?
No.
He doesn't. He was land economics.
He talks about Commons.
Yes, John R. Commons.
He sort of starts with Commons.
Do you know anything much about John R. Commons?
Yes. Yeah, I've studied quite a bit about
him. You do? They lived, you know, out in the country,
yes,
which was then the real country.
Right.
They were one of the first mm-hmm. people out mm-hmm. there. Along with Professor and Mrs. Leidy. Professor Leidy really founded WHA.
Mm-hmm.
And the Sonny Pyre was out there too. And John R. Commons' wife, Rachel Commons, was bound and determined that, or his wife knows, Rachel was his
daughter.
She should marry Harold Leidy. Harold Leidy, it didn't occur.
Yeah.
Didn't they have a son, too?
Yes, Jack.
Yes. And didn't he disappear?
Yeah, very strange story.
Very strange. But other people
mm-hmm.
have that come into their lives. It's a very tragic thing when it happens.
Yes.
Harriet Morris, their son, Russell Morris and Harriet Morris's son did the same thing. He's never come back. And she was a Jackson, of the Reginald Jackson family.
Mm-hmm.
She was the Jackson Oak.
Yes, yes.
Was named for her father. She was a daughter of Julia Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
She's gone. You see, when you're as old as I
am, right.
You remember things that nobody else knows.
Right, sure.
And there were people here in the university when my father was here and was living that I think are totally unknown, the names.
Mm-hmm.
Totally unknown.
Seems to happen.
Now, I suppose Morris Jastrow's name is still well known. How about Dr. Prokosh?
I think so.
That also
yes.
is well known. Well, that's good. And Miss Pittman in classics?
I don't know that.
Well,
but it could be.
Mm-hmm. It's
there's several names in classics I have heard.
Frederick Bruns.
Yes, yes.
German.
Yes.
Hohlfeld.
Yes, yes. It's a very famous German department, folks.
We had a very fine German department.
Still is.
Is it still?
Number one in the
country. Oh, that's good.
Or number two, maybe. Texas is the rival of this.
Really?
University of Texas.
For the German department. Well, we had a very, in one way, a very rewarding experience. After my father died, and I was the youngest of five children. And we lived in a big house on the corner of Kendall and North Prospect Avenue mm-hmm. with a tower room. The house is spoiled now. But it was lovely. A young German came here, Mr. Rittinghaus.
Yes, you mentioned him in the oral history.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then he went to
Austin,
Texas,
right,
and committed suicide. The climate was so antagonistic to Germany. It's a sad thing when that kind of thing happens.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And as you mentioned, the university was never quite the same
after. No, it wasn't. It just, well, it was struck a blow that I think leveled it for a while. I don't know what it's. I don't know what it's like now, except what Warren tells me. And
it's all very different, I'm sure.
Oh, I'm
it's
sure of that.
It's different every.
But then life is
decade.
So different.
Yeah, right.
Life is so very, very different than you.
Well,
seems
to get back to,
me,
to
yeah, excuse me.
I was going to get back to Walter Morton just once more. In his memoir, in his oral history, he says that after the late 50s,
yes,
very few of his colleagues would even speak to him.
Dreadful.
For example, Selig Perlman stopped talking to him.
Wow, terrible.
And it had to do with this effort to isolate him. And they, the department went to President Fred in 1957 and asked him to reappoint Walter to something else outside of the economics department. And Walter heard about that and was told about that.
What did President Fred?
He didn't do anything. But
well,
but
he didn't do anything in many things.
Yeah, his strategy apparently was to just let it wait. But that achieved what the department had wanted, which is that Walter felt the pressure, and he was not invited to any department meetings after that. He had been so obstreperous in his behavior that the department felt they just couldn't accomplish their business.
Well, it sounds
and
as
so
if he was
he had
far more extreme. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Than I had realized.
Well, and I guess this is really well along in his career. He wasn't a youngster.
Oh, no,
anymore.
No.
And
not at all.
Selig Perlman retired shortly after that. So this was near the end of the career of several of his lifelong friends.
Selig Perlman?
They had abandoned him. And he was very worried about that, felt badly about it. And he was still trying to understand why it all happened. And then he goes back, way back to 1944, when E.B. and Harold Groves, he says, worked out this scheme to get rid of him.
I think they were good friends, the Mortons of Carl Link.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
Very good friends. Well, Carl Link was a controversial.
Well, he's like that. I think they're very similar people.
Yes.
Anyway.
Very.
So
Carl Link was at Lakeview Sanatorium at the time that my daughter was, and he got over his TB as my daughter did, and when he was released, I think he made a big mistake. I think he shouldn't have published a lot of criticism of the care out there. He recovered. You shouldn't bite the hand that feeds.
It doesn't sound reasonable.
And he was also a good controversial.
Sounds like Walter.
Yes. It's neither kind nor wise thing to do.
Well, that's the main story I had wanted to check on with you about.
Are there any
a key figure in this?
Are there any? Well, I tell you, the university, I think, was practically run by, when Glenn Frank was here, by those women.
Uh-huh, I see.
And I would say the most militant of them